Welcome. You're listening to another new episode of NMPC Plus. We welcome you. We thank you for joining us. We thank you for making us part of your weekly rhythms. My name is Josh. I am the worship pastor at New Mercy Palisades Church, and I am joined by Pastor Kathy. Hello, Pastor Kathy.
Hello.
And I'm joined by Pastor Key. Hello, Pastor Key.
Hello.
How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Good?
Good.
All right. All right. All right. All right. We had a kind of what I'll call a four-day weekend of sorts, our version of a four-day weekend, partly because after Sunday, we usually have Sabbath on Monday, and then we come to staff meeting on Tuesdays, and we, just because of scheduling conflicts and all that stuff, we couldn't do our staff meeting on Tuesday, so we did our staff meeting on Wednesday. And, you know, to me, that's about as close to a full weekend as pastors usually get, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, like, we're always on call, we're sort of always at the ready, and we're sort of, you know, we're kind of, like, we're always doing ministry. Pastor Kathy, I think you said it today, you said something to the effect of, like, you know, there's no part-time pastor in their heart. Mm. Like, you're just always a pastor, you're always on call, you're always at the ready. And, yeah, so I was just thinking today, I was thinking about the extra day that we had. You know, I didn't really do much. I just lounged around and I had kind of like a day to myself, like just absolutely no contact, no people, no nothing. And I just, you know, I kind of kept to myself all day, but it got me thinking, and this is partly good because Pastor Kathy, we're still learning about your personality. We're learning about who you are and how you tick on the inside. But for all of us, I wondered how we could start today. I was talking about like our perfect day off. I'll give you a second to think about that.
Wow, no one's ever asked me that before.
What is your perfect day off? You can give me a range of activities. You can give me like a specific activity. You can give me just of like what was the last time you felt like this was like pretty close to a perfect day off? Okay. What does that look like for you guys?
I wake up early.
Okay.
Mm. And I'm so excited to optimize all the hours of the day. And then I eat breakfast, the best, most important meal of the day. And then I have a delicious beverage, maybe like a tea or a fun latte, and maybe have a delicious chocolate chip cookie with walnuts in it. And then maybe do some shopping, do some chit-chatting, and maybe I go somewhere new. And then I come home and then I have delicious noodles. And then I chit-chat. Yes, I love noodles.
All right.
Spicy noodles. And then I chit-chat all night to my husband, and then that's it.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow.
So a day full of chit-chatting.
Yeah.
Wow.
A day
Chatty Kathy.
Full of other people.
Chatty Kathy. There you go.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Interesting. Okay. We're gonna get back to that, but Pastor Key, what about for you?
Me too, is waking up a little bit early, not too early, a little bit early. Fishing on the lake in a kayak all morning, making sure I catch really big bass. And then video games in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And then reading my sci-fi books in the evening. Yeah, that's a good day off with perfect, no humid weather, and no one contacts me.
Yes, that part of the algorithm I can totally get behind. Okay, so already very different.
No chatting.
And if you could, you'd probably be out fishing by yourself.
Yes.
If you could.
Yes.
Yeah.
No one is with me on the lake. Wow. I remember the one time I went to the Seven Lakes here in upstate, got there early, and I could see the fog on the lake, and no one was on the lake. And I was like, this is paradise.
I'd be terrified.
I do think every once in a while if I drown, no one will find me. But
right. You know. That old issue. That little thing. Okay. For me, I got to say, I don't know why you guys said wake up early. You crazy. I'm sleeping in.
Nice.
But, you know, nowadays my version of sleeping in is like 10 o'clock, 10:30, maybe 11. Wow. I'll push it. I'll push it some days if, like, my wife, let's say, left the house really early in the morning and she's not kind of like kicking around. Because our house, our living situation right now, like, you can kind of hear what the other person is doing at all times. If they're not if they're not dead still, you can always hear what the other person's doing. And I get kind of sensitive in the mornings, like right around the, like when it's about time to wake up. I can go two ways. I can wake up really early. I can wake up really early because I'm like sensitive and somebody's woken me up. Or I can wake up really late because the house is dead quiet, right? I can go two ways. So I'm sleeping in. And I'm waking up when I feel good to wake up. My back doesn't hurt. I woke up this week with, and my lower back was just screaming at me.
Oh no.
I was like, oh Lord have mercy, not today. Like not today of all days. But I wake up, there's no aches or pains or groans. I get to make myself some pour over coffee, you know, do the whole business of weighing out the beans and grinding it and wetting the filter and doing the whole business. And then I can make one for my wife. and then the other part of that is I get to sort of like make some food for my wife as well. Like I like making her breakfast. I like making her, you know, like a late breakfast or like an early lunch or whatever, whenever she wants to eat, partly because I like feeling useful to her in that way. So that after I'm done, I can go play a round of golf and do a solo round.
Well played.
And well played. I be like, you know, babe, can you just eat this for lunch and then eat that for dinner and I'll see you at dinner time. You know, like just being able to because she'll, you know, she'll work without really thinking about food or whatever. So yeah. I like being able to take care of her, but I also like being able to play golf by myself. So that's fun.
Nice.
And then I get home and my wife and I just enjoy a quiet evening together, watching TV or just chilling. Maybe some chit chat. But I don't know about all night, Kathy. All night chit-chat is crazy to me.
I have to talk to Sam. Get his side of the story.
I got to pause the show every like 10 minutes. More chit-chat. Discuss what just happened. 5 minutes later, more chit-chat. Really? And then we don't finish.
That would drive me insane.
I'm so curious how our staff retreat is going to be.
Well, if no one chit-chats with me, then I'll just be on the phone.
It's not that we don't want to chit-chat. It's that we are physically incapable of chit-chatting, I think is the thing. Now, we all put an effort in. We all put a very high effort in.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
You made me think of something. So you wake up in the morning, you say you're sensitive to sounds and things like that. Have you seen on Instagram how the difference between men waking up and moving around the house in the morning versus women?
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
Yes, I have.
No.
So I'm going to throw Rollo under the bus.
Uh-huh.
But there's a lot of slamming going on, a lot of plates hitting stuff going on, a lot of noise. The lights just go on like there's not a care in the world that somebody's sleeping in the bed.
There's so much to do, though.
Whereas when I get up and I see that she's sleeping, I tiptoe around. I don't make any noise.
Yeah.
If I turn on the light, I'll use my phone and I'll like shade it so it doesn't hit her eyes.
Go ahead and preach about it. Go ahead.
Is this a thing? Are men like that and women are like, is that real?
Well, why don't we ask? Why don't we ask the other wife here?
The lights are going on. We're doing the dishes. We're doing everything.
Is that something that you recognize and use?
Wow.
We're stomping down the stairs. We're starting the day.
Wow.
Even the doors, I make sure to close very carefully.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to say, yeah, 3 out of 3 at this table. It's about that. And my wife, God bless her, she's just taking care of herself. And it's not her fault. Like, our place just has, like, creaky floors, and you can hear everything. Like, you can hear her walking. You know, like, the living room is above the bedroom, and so you can sort of hear the walking across the whatever. And that's the stuff where I just understand. I go, like, what am I going to do? Tell her not to walk around?
Yeah.
But there are some things that she'll do where I'm like, okay, maybe this is something. So one day I had to ask her, like, hey, could you maybe please? Because there was a couple days in a row when she would get up really early, and, you know, we have this ice maker, but it's not the indoor, like, you put the cup to the thing and ice falls out. It's the freezer. So you pull out the drawer in the freezer, and then you scoop out ice and whatever. At 8:30 in the morning, my darling wife, Dawn, I love you, and we've talked about this before, but at 8:30 in the morning, on, like, Mondays too, she was just like, bam!
It's time to make a latte to get the week going.
Like, long pouring it. I don't know what she's doing upstairs, but she's like long pouring the ice into her glass. Oh, and so I think you're like, hey, could you maybe not get the ice that loudly or something?
Or take a cube at a time.
Yeah. She put it in a stainless steel, like, insulated thing where it slams inside.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those vacuum insulated thing, but it's not sound insulated. So it's like bang, 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 like every ice cube that hits the thing. Oh, we're having fun.
Oh, my goodness. No, I was really curious if that's a thing. The fact that somebody put it on Instagram, like, oh, this is a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm like, is she the only one?
No. I like how you said you close the door and, like, you're quiet. I leave the door open to inspire everyone to wake up.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife does the same thing. There's a part of me that, like, I'll wake up and, like, the door is wide open. I'm like, all right. I think this is a message. I am getting up now. But God bless our spouses,
yes,
the husbands, the wives, all of them, for putting up with our antics. By the way, it's not. I'm sure there are plenty of things that we do that you know, it's the other way around.
Yes,
we're not singling out women here.
Yes,
you know,
no, not at all.
It's the husbands that, man, my darling wife has to deal with my socks everywhere. I'm the sock guy.
Me
as
too.
Soon as I come home, the socks come off immediately wherever I am. It's usually the couch. And so usually around the couch, the socks are just littered around there.
That's right. Every wife complains about that.
Yep.
I do visitations and the wife complains about it. And I'm like, oh, don't worry, I do that too.
Yeah. I'm the same way. You know, there's so much that my wife has to put up with and all that stuff. So in any case, yeah, I just thought that, I don't know. I don't know how we got here. But we have gotten here now. And so, yeah, I just wanted to talk about our days off only because, like, you know, part of a day off, or it's not really a day off either, but, like, part of having a day to ourselves means that the upcoming week is, like, even more, like, shortened, and, like, it's like a shortened week of ministry and all that stuff. So we're going to be putting our axe to the grindstone and kind of, you know, getting our feet wet with ministry again, but it's nice to just be.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, just remember that we get to rest. Just resting is good. Gonna somehow try to crank this thing back in the direction of a useful conversation.
That was useful.
Yes.
I felt affirmed.
Yeah. If you find the encouragement from them, then I guess I'll put up with the stares and I'll put up with the my wife going, hey, I heard the podcast. I guess I'll put up with that if you're encouraged by it. But wrenching this back to some sort of a useful conversation, we're going to talk about the message. We're going to talk about not so much the message, but there was something in the message that I wanted to us to sort of spend the balance of our time together with. But for context, Pastor Key, you gave the message this past Sunday. And we're in the middle of a series called Spirit Charged, charged being a double entendre, kind of like a, in the same way that you charge your phone, you charged, or, you know, you're given a charge, you're given an encouragement, a command to go out and do. And so in the middle of the Spirit Charged series, your message was the logic of God, and you talked about the way that God will sometimes work things out in your life, or or maybe open a door or close a door, or show you your path, show you your will, show you your way, and kind of the way that God will sort of work these things out. But I wondered if you can give us just a little bit more in terms of context, in terms of where you're trying to go with the message, with the logic of God, and we'll sort of take it from there. But if you could, please give you the floor.
That's a good summary.
And we're moving on.
That's a really good summary. The only thing I would add is the passage that we used was the one where Paul and Silas are on their first missionary journey. And or is it the second one? Maybe it's their second. Anyway, they're on a missionary journey. And they're traveling. And God closes the door. It says the Holy Spirit told him not to go there. Then he'd go somewhere else, hundreds of miles away. And then God closes that door. And so they're just wandering. And, you know, our lives can feel like that, right? And I tried to illustrate how, in fact, that wandering ended up being very productive. And God had a logic behind why he did what he did. And them being obedient to that eventually led to them seeing God's logic unfold. So that's the basic gist of it and how to apply that to our lives. But yeah, that's it.
Yeah. So what I wanted to do is, by the way, I say this all the time. I mean it I mean it especially today. You should go back and listen to the message. I listened to it earlier today, kind of as I was running my errands, and I was just getting a lot. And I told you guys on Sunday that my mind was a little distracted when I was sitting in the message. So having the time to go back and listen to it again, it really helped me. I was able to kind of experience it for the first time, you know, some parts of the message, most of the message. But one of the things that really got me and where I really want to spend the balance of our time is toward the end of the message, the back half of the message, you were talking about the different takeaways in a story like that and in the passage that you're preaching from. And the one takeaway that really stood out to me that I thought would be a really fantastic, at least I hope would be a fantastic place of conversation, is the idea that not every closed door means no from God. Not every closed door is from God at all. And I don't know that you really said this. I don't know. I might be missing it. But the inverse of that is also like not every open door is from God.
Yeah.
And not every open door is like a yes from God, right? And so I was thinking about that. I was thinking about the dynamic of something like that. You know, we use this language, pastors, especially in Christians, especially, we'll use this language of like the open door, the closed door, the easy path or the hard path, the narrow way or the wide open way, right? And we'll use these terms, and a lot of times what kind of goes hand in hand with conversations like this of understanding closed door, open door, things like that is discernment, right? Because like to your point in that message, Pastor Key, how do Paul and Silas and it helps that it was a literal door, the prison doors. Paul and Silas in that passage. They're worshiping after being in prison, and then the all prison doors just kind of fling open, and the guard is just, you know, freaking out, and they say, like, this is not what we're supposed to do. We're not supposed to leave here. This doesn't mean what we think it means or what man might think it might mean. And so they have to do an incredible thing, which is discern whether or not the open door, the closed door, whatever, is of God or not of God. And, you know, as the topic of conversation today, first of all, how do they, I don't know where to even start, you know, like my mind is going everywhere right now. It's like, how do Paul and Silas even dare to stay in the prison after, like, the prison doors are flung open.
Yeah.
Right?
Remarkable.
It's like, how do they dare to do that? Because somebody else might be like, the will of God is that you leave.
Yeah.
Like, at that kind of...
Yeah.
And so, like, they're going against what others might think is the will of God, yeah. but they have to be so defiant to, like, not take that way, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't know what your guys' thoughts is on that, about discernment, or, like, how you craft, or how you hone, or how you get your discernment to that place. But I don't know, like, what are your guys' thoughts on that, about open door, closed door, discernment, and all that stuff?
Kathy? I have a lot to say, so I've already said too much. But, I mean, that's what I mean. I mean, they're going to listen to my sermon, so.
Okay, well, if it helps, let me ask a more pointed question. Kathy, for you, how do you grow in your discernment, in your everyday discernment, or just in your discernment in your own relationship with God? What does discernment even look like for you?
Well, one tell for me, like one practical tell, is whatever option looks easiest or most convenient is usually, not always, mm-hmm. not the one that God is trying to use to help me to grow. Yeah, I had a pastor say that to me one time in college, and I was like, no, don't say that. The one that's less appealing, the one that you don't necessarily want to do, or the one that looks harder, not always, but sometimes that's the way. So when the doors fling open, it's like, oh, but then it almost feels like if you were in that moment, like, is this okay? Is this like cheating?
Sure.
And I feel like when I feel that way, that is usually not the way that I'm supposed to go, if that makes sense. And there's a lot more growing that happens from going through something a lot more layered and complex. Yeah.
Right.
Not always.
But let me just press in right there for a second, because what you're describing is really interesting, right? Mm. Because you are... what you're describing is what I think so many of us do, which is take like a framework that we understand, or some kind of a like guiding like modus operandi. Like we go, okay, if it's easy, then it's probably not of God. Not always, but it's probably not of God, right? And so we live this life, and then when the things kind of come up, when they are easy, or when they're not so easy, or when two options present themselves, and one of them is the easier thing and the other one is the less easy thing, and you like, how do you know that even that the thing of like, if it's easy, it's maybe not the way of the Lord, right? Like, how do you know that even that is a way to kind of correctly assume whether or not, like how does that play out in your life? Like,
well, I'm gonna use like a really lame example.
Sure.
So I do like to watch The Love is Blind on Netflix.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of times there are people
downturn in the
conversation. Okay. So there are times when people are deciding between two options, you know, to like date or marry. And I'm like, okay, like, and then a lot of times these people who are often lost in the sauce when they think of things this way, they're like, but this one is like the easy one, you know, like whatever, you know, this is what I always go to. This is what I'm used to. And this one is like, you know, they like contrast the two.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, if it's easy, why is it easy or simple, right? Like, if there are two options in front of you, what about it is so simple? Is it because there have been no challenging moments? Have there been no, like, opportunities to actually show character, or to have to fight through something, or to develop something? I don't know. Usually, like, you know, easy is the word used like loosely, you know, but if something is overly simple, then what has not yet happened that might come up later that might challenge that?
Oh, I see.
You know, so in order to like season something, right, and to really develop something, whether it's a relationship, situation, whatever it is, you know, that takes, you know, a little bit more fighting against friction or figuring something out, you know? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. That wasn't a bad example, you know?
No, it was a good example. But I think, and I'm sorry to like bully you like this, but I don't know. It's really interesting, this part of it, right? Because like, to me, you know, I've definitely in seasons past, I've definitely used that same kind of an MO of like, if it's easy or if it's hard, or a lot of what I will default to is the thing of like peace. I know it's God's will if I have peace about it. Mm-hmm. Even if it doesn't make sense, somehow like I'll look at a situation and if it doesn't make sense, I'll have peace about it, right? And that's generally like how I begin the journey of discerning, you know, because sometimes I have peace about something but it's because I want peace about it. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily I have been given peace about it, right? Mm-hmm. It's the peace that transcends all understanding, mm-hmm. as Philippians might talk about, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's sort of where I'm getting at is the thing of like, is you just saying that, like, if you have peace about it, then it's probably the start of God's will, or it's has something to do with God's will. Mm. Or if it is easy, then it's probably not God's will. By saying that out loud at the onset, mm-hmm. does that not affect the actual discernment that needs to happen in a moment, right? Because like, again, we know in hindsight, because the Bible tells us, like the Paul and Silas thing, like when the prison doors fling open, that they don't take that opportunity. They just stay in the prison. Mm. And that's them discerning that that's what they need to do. And it's probably also motivated by the guard who's like scared out of his mind that he's going to be fired, if not executed, for not carrying out his duty as a prison guard, right? And so, yeah, like, yeah, so, okay, so going back to it, I'm sorry, I'm getting to the question, I promise I am. So getting back to it, the thing of like, if you have peace about it or if it's easy, X, Y, and Z, does that help discernment or does that hinder discernment? I don't know if that's a fair question, but that's sort of where my mind is.
Yeah. Maybe it's a piece of discernment.
Sure.
But it's a piece that still needs to be subject to God. If this is easy, it seems like this is a way. But it can't be just the way just because it's, I mean, this is hard, so this must be the way, but that's kind of too singular or too thin of a criteria to determine definitively.
Right, and so that even
needs to be subject. And this is where prayer and connecting and having a relationship with God comes in, you know, where you can get some of the further stuff.
So then, Pastor Keith, for you, how then, as you, I'm sure, over your ministry career so far, you've had a lot of these kind of crossroad moments or moments in which you've presented with a variety of different options. What do you do to hone your discernment to make sure that your discernment sort of stays sharp?
Yeah. Wow. I feel like I've made so many wrong decisions.
Sure. Yeah. You and me both. Yeah.
I will say, though, two things that have really helped me within the past decade would be not making a decision and sitting on it and processing my emotions, because my emotions always get in the way of good decision making. So I won't react. I won't really, you know, I'll let all the crap that I'm feeling out amongst kind of like an inner circle, like amongst staff and stuff. But then I'll process it 1 week, 2 weeks, and then also the second piece I would add is I have a coach, and I'll kind of talk it over with them, and they don't tell me what to do, but they reflect back to me my thinking process, and I just go to God in prayer, and really that's where I'm just like, okay, this seems like the right way to go. You know, recently I had to make a decision, and in prayer God told the communication I felt like I got from the Holy Spirit was, Kiwon, what do you think would please me the most in this situation? And I was like, damn it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so in that instance, it was a harder thing, right? But it doesn't always end up, like you're saying, it's not always that, you know, and that's why just bringing it to God, I think. Yeah, but it's not easy.
Yeah.
We're not rational beings. We are, but I think people don't, I think we fail to realize how much we are controlled by our emotions. And so getting kind of my head around, or coming to understand how much my emotions impact everything, that's really helped me, I think, take care of that as best as I can so that I can make better and hear God better and discern God better. So
sure.
Yeah, so that's all part of it, I think.
Yeah. Are our emotions always... Do our emotions always cloud discernment?
No.
Expand.
I would say for me, 90% of the time they do. But then there are emotions that you get, for example, like peace. Right? There are also emotions that you get when you see injustice, you feel anger. Yeah, you know, various things. But what I don't know, what I found is even if they're good emotions and proper emotions, there's still so much sin kind of dangling around there that I still need to kind of bring it to a place. And then even though my emotion is right, I'll recognize I still need to act in this way, that emotion, to bring about what I think is God's will. So that's the best I can do. But I don't know. Off the top of my head, I can't think of a time where I just was hit with emotion. It was the right emotion, and I just kind of acted on it, and it was God's will. I can't think of a time when that was true, if I'm being honest. But it could just be bad recall because of my age.
Yeah, well, well, maybe, Kathy, I don't know. For you, do you ever have something like that, what Pastor Key is describing right now, where you're faced with something, you get an emotion, and that emotion kind of leads you to the place? Or are you more of the mind that as much as we can remove emotion from the discernment piece, or I don't know, like, what is it for you? Where does emotion kind of fall into the place of discerning whether this is of God or not of God? This is God's will, not God's will.
I try to process emotions before I make decisions, yes. I think the example that comes to mind is just taking this job.
Sure.
The emotional reaction to the suggestion was not like rainbows necessarily, you know? It's like a lot of fear and like confusion. I loved the job that I was at previously. And, you know, so this idea of having to leave that and the comfort and the culture and having to step into something that is very new for me and pretty intimidating, you know, emotional me would be like, no. And I kind of said no for like, I don't know, like a week or two. Yeah, so... If it's a negative emotion, I am more inclined to try to take longer to really process it to, you know, figure out what's at the root of that. If it's a positive emotion, I'll still try to make sure that I process. Because, yeah, it's just because I like something doesn't necessarily mean that it's what is capital G good.
Sure. Yeah.
And what God wants.
Sure.
Yeah, I think that time also and just experiences along the way that have to do with a certain umbrella like topic or decision in your life, like the pieces that God put along the way should definitely not be ignored when going through that processing. Yeah, so like for this example that I'm using, the pieces that God placed in my life from post-college to when I applied is like... what I really had to examine before slamming that submit button.
Sure.
Praise the Lord.
Yeah. And then after that, I'm like, you know, God, if this is what you want, I guess like we'll see like how this goes. I put in my effort, I prayed, and I, you know, and these are the pieces that I think, but I'm going to trust that, you know, the outcome is going to go the way that God wants. And you know, that point that you made in the sermon where, God already knows the end of the story. Like, he knows the outcome already. So he's the best one to put the pieces in place and to lead you, right? So I didn't know what the end of that particular situation would look like. But I think, it actually just became clearer and clearer. And that was something that I prayed for. Like, I need clarity on this. Clarity came like within minutes because someone was very enthusiastically checking his
I was like, it came through. I read her resume. I was like, wow, this is well done. And I texted her right away.
This girl's gonna write the newsletters from now on.
Can I throw something in here?
Please.
What I realized, what it described, is the Vulcan mentality and Star Trek, because they're basically shut down all emotion and use all logic, which I don't think is actually the right way. I think emotions are important, but they need to be processed. I think that's probably what I'm getting at. But I will say this. I was trying to think of a positive where I had the emotion. I was like, okay, this is of God. And probably the only times that come to mind where it was like that was when I was delighting in something good. So I'm on the top of the mountain, and I'm not like, is enjoying this kind of God's will. No, I'm just like, hey, I'm here. I'm not going to feel guilty about being here, you know, enjoying a sunrise like this morning. Rala and I, we're looking at it. It's incredible. I will say that I think we probably need to explore this a little bit more kind of on our own and stuff, because I don't want to blunt emotions in the moment, because I think emotions in the moment are very valuable to living and to life. And I think God wants us to have those things. The issue is when sin kind of creeps in there, right? And so that discernment process is difficult. And where my mind went, interestingly, I don't know why I went there, but when people get married, some people struggle with the pleasure of sex because they've been told all their lives that this pleasure is taboo. Right. And it carries in to their marriage and affects them. I think it distorts their experience. And I feel like it can't always be, you know, like, if it feels bad, it's right. I don't think that's always the case. So I don't know. I think it's just really, it's a complex issue. And I don't know. Besides just trying to keep walking with God and finding healing and kind of, but that's really probably the only solution.
Yeah. So then with discernment, by the way, I think those are fantastic points, a lot of which probably comes from years and years of history with God. And if one thing is clear in this conversation is that really, truly, like, real discernment comes from years and years of being in intimate relationship with God and figuring out, like, getting some things wrong and trying to follow God's will, but making mistakes, you know, like, it's going to come from that. Right. But, you know, part of the benefit of having three pastors talk about something like this is maybe we can help people sort of leapfrog over those years of wrong decisions and over those years of bad choices, only because we want to see people thrive, right?
Yeah.
Can
I throw something?
Go ahead.
So it's interesting because I feel like we require time and experience with any human being to be to discern why that person does what they do and what they're trying to communicate. You know, like, I've worked with different staff over the years, and I'll know them for like 3 months. And like, I think this is the reason why they're doing what they're doing. And it would bother me. But then like a year later, I'm like, that's not at all what they were thinking when they were doing that. You know, and I realized, oh my God, you got to build that, you know, rapport. You got to get to know them. And same thing with God. And so bringing it back to the whole Paul and Silas in prison, I think one of the reasons why they didn't run through the open gate or the open prison doors was Jesus' teaching of love your enemies so embedded itself in their hearts that it became an operating center for them. And so they saw the plight, because if that prison guard lost them, he would have to undergo the same punishment that they had gone through.
Right.
You know
what
I mean? And so that compassion, I think, is one of the pieces. I think the other thing is, if they had fled, it's almost as if they would have proven their guilt, in a sense. This is what one of the commentators said. And they said, by staying, at the end of that passage, they have the opportunity to still maintain their integrity and their innocence and plead that case to them. And so, in fact, the people who imprisoned them at the end, they look silly because they imprisoned these Roman citizens without due process and this and that. And so they actually built, they preserved the reputation as Christians. Oh, we're not criminals. You know, we actually this and that. So I think there are a number of different issues, but I do believe the operating center of their action of not fleeing was their understanding. They've gotten to know God. They understand God's heart. And in this moment, they're like, hey, I think this is what actually, after I've gotten to know God, I think this is what he wants me to do here. But that, I don't think, if they are at the front end of their faith, I don't think they would have known that.
Yeah. You know, I'm really happy that you brought that up, or at least the portion of Paul and Silas staying, mm-hmm. and the portion of them staying is them creating a better case for themselves of their innocence, mm-hmm. and not their guilt. Now, of course, and I don't know why my mind immediately goes there. Yeah. Maybe it's because of the conversation and I'm looking for holes to poke into all of these things. Yeah. But, you know, the flesh might look at a situation like that, or I don't know why, but I have the mind of like, today, the contemporary person, mm-hmm. viewing a similar situation of like, oh, why did that person leave? And someone kind of operating from their flesh might be like, oh, because they knew they were guilty, so they stayed in there, right?
Yeah, right.
And so, yeah. but this is exactly what I'm talking about, because to one, it looks one way, and to another, mm-hmm. it looks the other way. And if we're always doing things for what looks the best or for what looks right, then we're always going to kind of miss the mark in some way.
That's right.
And so to a certain degree, there's a huge amount of trust. There's a huge amount of like taking a, you know, like, you know, bungee jumping and just trusting that that rope will hold you, mm-hmm. and all that stuff. And so my question now is God's will, or when it comes to discernment, like, is God's choice or us doing things the way of the Lord, is it always achievable? Or another way to say it is, like, is it always estimable before the thing? Right? Like, is it always the case that as hard as it might be, you could always find the will, the right way, the whatever, before the thing? Mm. Which, spoiler alert, has not been my experience.
No.
You know, like, is it always estimable before the choice or the precipice or the thing or the season or the whatever? Or how long, how high is this jump? Mm-hmm. And how long is this bungee cord? And I don't know, help me make sense of that. Like, what do you guys think? Is it 90%? Is it 100%? Is it 20%? Like, what's the thing there?
I know what Dallas Willard would say. We're in the Hearing God course.
Sure.
He would say 100% of the time, God is communicating something. But the problem is, most of the time, we're not keyed into that. You know, and so, in my experience, and even in Paul, right, when he goes and he sees this closed door, and he sees this other closed door, I think there's probably some frustration in there. And I don't think he necessarily saw the next step after this decision, that this decision led to this. But he was just like, I can only see so far. The only thing I see at this point is God telling me no. I don't see the wisdom behind it, blah, 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 but I'm just going to obey. And so there, I think there's that. But this piece that you're talking about where, you know, can you discern that God is actually saying no in this instance beforehand? Before you actually do it and you find out, oh, that was the wrong decision, you know? I don't know, man. Sometimes I'm like, I don't see it, God. But I think part of the reason why I don't see it is because I don't want to see it.
You know? Sure.
Yeah. But that's not always the case. There are times I'm genuinely baffled, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Kathy, what about for you? Like, what's your track record on there? Or at least what's your feeling or what's your experience? Like, is it always estimable beforehand, or do you sometimes need to get a little mud on your face?
What if I just said 10 out of 10 times I'm right?
Then I'd say the next course offered by New Mercy Pastors Church.
How to be perfect by Kathy.
I cannot say that I know in advance.
Sure.
No.
Yeah.
Not 100%. No.
Yeah. So then what do you do, right? Like, what do you do when you're standing at the precipice of a thing, decision, yeah, season, whatever, and you can't for the life of you discern? What if Paul and Silas, for the life of them, they couldn't discern? Is it not? You know, like, how long did they wait?
Yeah.
And did they just happen to be in the prison when the guard comes by?
They're in the middle of the decision.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Oh, we're here.
And the guard's breaking down, and Paul's like, all right, maybe we'll just switch to this guy, right? Sometimes that does happen, right? Sometimes life tells you how to handle a certain situation or whatever. But I don't know. There's a part of me that wishes, hopes, dreams that there's a general sort of a way or path way to forge through. So what do you guys do? What do you do when you're on the precipice of a thing and you don't know, you can't, you just can't know? How do you, what are the operating centers for you guys?
Yeah.
You know, Pastor Key, you talked about operating centers for Paul and Silas in the moment. What about for you guys? Like, when you don't know, when it's a literal 50-50, when it's not the choice between sin and sinlessness, right? It's just a question of
both
two facts.
Are good.
Both are good on their own. It's just about what do you do?
Yeah.
How do you guys, what are your operating centers? What are the things that you default to so that you can make a decision and later find out if it was right or wrong?
Yeah, for me, sometimes the operating center doesn't even work because let's say it looks like it's either way is fine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so an operating center at that point is like, oh, that doesn't really help. The only thing that has worked for me, I actually wrote a blog on this. It was called Decision Paralysis Amongst Christians. And at the end of the day, probably the ultimate operating center, if you can call it that, is, you know, if you don't have clarity, you understand that God is a God of grace, right? And you make a decision. And there's enough evidence in the Bible that no matter what decision you make, God's grace will cover that decision and somehow incorporate it into his will. Because he does that for people who actually sin, and the results of that sin he still incorporates into the unfolding of his will. And so obviously, you know, that's not what we want, but let's say we make what seems like a neutral decision. My hope is, God, I'm going to make this decision. I can't stand here wavering back and forth forever. So I think this is the way. Maybe I'm not hearing you or whatever, but your grace, I know, will follow me. And that's really probably the best approach that I've taken with life. And I would say, in fact, that's how I ended up at Hope Church, which became New Mercy.
Mm-hmm.
I came back from Florida. I was like, I don't know where to go, God. Job presented itself. I was like, don't hear anything. I'll go with it.
YOLO.
Yeah, you know. But that's probably the thing that's helped me the most.
Sure.
I think it depends on the situation. I pray. Sometimes I look back at old journal entries. Sometimes I reach out to a very trusted, like, figure, you know.
Mm.
I like to call up my old, like, pastors and teachers or my siblings.
That's good.
Yeah. Who like know me well and who, you know, only have good intentions and things. Sometimes it'll just come up when I don't expect it, like if I'm reading the Bible or something, and then an answer will come to me through the passage. It depends on the situation. And sometimes you just slam the, you know, submit button and you just you balls out, you just go.
Yeah.
And then you realize this was God's will.
you know what the other side of that is. This is not God's will. And it worked to the opposite effect.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
But in Mercy Kids we're going over Abraham, and God takes Sarah's choices, you know, and then he does something amazing with it, like Pastor Key was saying. You know, he takes some of these not great choices that people make to try to get to the end that they think is God's will, and then he kind of figures out a way to still bless the people.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's the whole GPS thing that I was talking about.
Yeah.
You go swimmer, recalculate. Yeah. God is doing that in the Bible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe that's what it is, right? Maybe it's you won't know, or you can't know everything.
Yeah.
Because none of us are God, and none of us sort of operate with that same omnipotence that the Lord has this side of heaven.
I'm curious if there is times where he doesn't tell you. And like, he's like, just make a decision.
Yeah.
It's okay.
It is my strong suspicion.
Yeah.
Like anecdotally and from experience, it is my strong suspicion that every once in a while, mm-hmm. he'll kind of do that.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I kind of go to, Kathy, your example was the start of your ministry position here. A lot of where I go to is the end of my last ministry position. Mm. And that was a kind of, I had no idea. I had no idea what to do. I was feeling a certain way, but I was feeling, you know, all tied up in knots about whether I should stay or whether I should go or all that stuff. And I sought and I sought and I sought the Lord. There was prayer. There was fasting. Mm. There was staying up at all hours of the day, evening, just trying to figure it out. There was counsel, there was asking people, there was, you know, just being super raw and honest with other people. And at the end of it all, I still didn't know what to do. I still didn't know what the right thing was, right? Mm. And I remember just being like really angry with the Lord in that season.
Yeah.
Not because I felt bad, but it's because I didn't know what he wanted me to do.
Mm.
I was really angry with God. And I've shared a version of this before, but like, the only thing that really got me comfort and the only thing that really allowed me to make a decision was the idea that I felt like the Lord was saying, Josh, you know who I've made you to be.
Hmm.
Whatever you decide here, like, it's not about right and wrong. It's about what you're willing to do, prepared to do, where you want to go.
Hmm.
And just trust me in all of it. And that's kind of, you know, we talk about operating centers and we talk about like, what we sort of default to, and a lot of where I default to nowadays is just sort of like, God, I want to do your will, and I think you know that. Pretty sure you know that. I know that I want to do your will, but I know that I'm also weak. So when I can't discern what your overarching plan, will, whatever is, I'm going to make a decision. It won't be careless, and I'll really try my best, Lord. I'll commit to living a life of thoughtful, prayerful decisions, but when I can't, and I feel like you're giving it into my hands, then I'm going to make decisions.
Mm.
Just be gentle with me in that process, Lord, because I don't know and I don't have everything.
Yeah.
You have it.
Yep.
And I'm just trusting that I can find it.
Awesome.
Yeah. And so
God's not just going to ditch us because we make a bad decision.
Yeah.
Or the wrong one.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that's right. I think it's, we're almost dared to make wrong decisions is how I like to say it to a lot of people.
Yeah. That sounds very much like Martin Luther.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sin boldly. Like Martin Luther.
Yeah.
Is that the title? Sin boldly.
That's one of the things that he said. If you're going to sin boldly, I'm like, oh.
Yeah. I think there's a different way to have worded that.
Yeah.
Dear Martin Luther.
It's, you know, obviously in a different context. But,
sure.
But before we wrap up, you know, you can finish tied up, but I want to throw one little piece that didn't belong to this. It's kind of a different topic.
Yeah.
But
please.
Oh, you want me to do it now?
Go ahead.
Are you done tying this piece?
Yes.
Okay. So I, you know, our spiritual direction group, I kind of mentioned this, and I didn't have time to explore this in the sermon, but if you look at the Philippian church, right, easily one of the most encouraging churches throughout the New Testament. Generous, beyond, like, just all around just amazing, right? You know, not perfect, of course. And I was thinking, like, how did that church become that way? And what I realized is you see that church being reflected in Lydia. The nature, how she's generous, you know, toward the, you know, Paul and these people. And what I realized is part, the reason why the Philippian church ended up the way it did was because of the leadership of Lydia in the inception of that community. And that DNA, if, you know, that's a language we use nowadays, just stood with that church. And I just thought that was such an incredible legacy, such an incredible thing, and just shows the importance of good leadership, you know?
Yeah.
Which made me feel bad. Like, what's my legacy?
Well, you still have time to...
yeah, we'll see. Yeah. But anyway, I just thought it was pretty neat because, yeah. Philippian Church is amazing.
So. For sure. I mean, at the end of the day, let all of our legacies just be that we tried to do the will of the Lord.
Amen.
And that'll be that.
Yes, sir.
That'll do it for us here at NMPC Plus. Thank you again for listening, for watching. Thank you to our audience for being the faithful few. This is a joke that I like to do, but I was at a wedding this past weekend, and a few people came up to me, and just randomly, like, it's always so weird to learn who listens to the podcast.
Oh, no.
Because I went to a wedding past weekend, and one or two people came up to me and were like, by the way, I really love the podcast. I was listening to it the other day, and I was like, so you're the one. Listen, I know that more than one person is watching and listening to this podcast. And what I mean to say when I say all of that is thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Thank you for making us part of your day, your week, your weekly rhythms, whatever they may be. And hopefully you in this conversation, or at least being a kind of fly on the wall to this conversation, you're being honed and your discernment is being honed in talking or listening to three people kind of, you know, work it out and work out what their discernment looks like in this day and age. So wherever you are in that journey, just know that you have people just like us, exactly us, that are also trying to work it out as well. With that, we will bring this time to a close. Thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for listening. And this is NMPC Plus signing off for now.